Hey, everybody, and welcome to this week's episode of the Roost Podcast. As always, I am your host, Carter Spires, here with my co-host, Matthew Bartlett, the owner and managing editor of The Roost, your premier source for Rice Sports News. Coming off a just kind of a weird game against Wake Forest last Friday night in the home opener in Rice Stadium. We will talk about this week that we will talk about that game and review that, and then we'll have a special interview with y'all before moving into a preview of this weekend's game at NRG Stadium against the University of Texas. I think we have a couple of just housekeeping things to cover before we get to that.
Yeah, housekeeping. Thank you, everybody who's been jumping in and participating so far on the forum, the discussion, the pick 'em game. That's been really great. Want to let you guys know that actually, if you go into the forum on our site, you can actually subscribe and you can get notifications emailed to you and sent in for posts and comments and things like that. So we're doing a bunch of our practice notes that are available for all members of the site. All you got to do is sign up, and those are free once you're signed in, and you can actually get an email sent to you whenever we get those up, because, you know, sometimes we get them up immediately after practice. Sometimes we're processing, pulling quotes, whatever you have you. So you can get those as soon as they're up and make sure you're not missing things that, you know, could prove to be important. So that's one piece. And then want to say a thank you to everyone so far who has gone ahead and given us a review on iTunes. So far, I looked yesterday, we have a 4.9 star rating, which is pretty good, but not quite five. You know, I don't know if that does that make us more authentic, Carter, to not just be five?
Yeah, and you know, it at least looks like we haven't you know, gotten a bunch of bots together to shoot our way up the rankings. So, you know, gives us a little cred, I think.
Yeah, there you go. So go be our bots or our real people, hopefully. SSK2001 and TJ678, thank you so far for your comments. You know, that it really does help in helping spread the word. We are, you know, the only Rice unaffiliated with the University Rice podcast that we know of, and any help that y'all can get to help spread the word is very much so appreciated. So thank you on both of those fronts. And that's it for house sitekeeping. I guess we can skip ahead to Conference USA. So first note is Rice was not the only team to lose this weekend. It was, so this is non-conference play. And for the most part, the CUSA teams are scheduling a good amount of Power 5 teams with some FCS thrown in there. Right now, UAB is 2-0. They are also the only team in Conference USA with a non-conference win over a team that doesn't play in the FBS. Or, sorry, doesn't play in the FCS. They beat Akron from the FBS in week two. So they're 2-0. They are the only 2-0 CUSA team, for what that matters. And there are, Rice has company in the 0-2 group. There are two other 0-2 CUSA teams. Florida Atlantic has had a tough road like the Owls. They lost to Ohio State and UCF. Can't fault them too much for what Lane Kiffin was up against there, but FIU has lost to Tulane and Western Kentucky, and Western Kentucky lost to an FCS team in week one. So FIU, a team that, you know, I thought would be among the contenders in the East, and they have started out 0-2 and already have a conference loss. So,
yeah, it's, you know, we said before the season that this looked to be a very a lot of parity in CUSA this year. Maybe that is expressing itself in ways that we didn't expect.
Yeah, you called the Rice game weird. I think we have a good amount of weird in Conference USA so far, and we are 2 weeks in.
Yeah, so that puts it, what, after 2 weeks, there are 14 teams in the conference, right? So that's one team 2-0, three 0-2. So that leaves us with 10 teams that are 1-1. So parity all around.
Yeah, a good mix.
All right. With that, we will move into the Rice game itself. A 41-21 loss to Wake Forest at Rice Stadium. You know, not the results you would want, obviously. But hey, better to lose by 20 than by 32, like they did to Wake Forest last year. And, you know, that's in a game where you lost one of your starting corners to a targeting penalty in the first quarter. And you also lost your starting quarterback on your second drive of the game. You know, all things considered, I think there are some positives and negatives to take out of this one. Obviously, the number one thing, which is bigger than anything else, is Wiley's health. By all accounts, seems like an injury that, you know, was obviously very, very scary on the field. But, you know, he was all the tests they ran came back negative, it sounds like. And he was out of the hospital and back in the Rice facilities the next morning, I think. So definitely something scary. And you know, where his health is more important than anything. But very glad to see that was not perhaps as severe as it looked on the field.
Yeah, Coach said he would not have been able to go to sleep if he didn't see Wiley up and walking around on Friday night. So we have confirmed that at least that is the case. And so at time of recording, we haven't heard much else released other than Wiley is doing well. I went ahead and talked with his mom and his dad, and they said, thank you so much for all the prayers and support that you guys have shown so far. All future updates will be coming through the university, but they're appreciative, and they said Wiley is in good spirits and doing as well as they could hope. So doing well, and glad to see. You know, it was a very, and I was telling Carter this, you know, off air, I've covered a lot of college football games, and I can't recall a 15-minute delay waiting for an injury and somebody get carted off. So it was a pretty scary situation, you know, for those who were there and able to follow it.
Yeah, you know, luckily enough that he seems to be doing okay, that we can, you know, talk about this in terms of football. But it's really unfortunate for them to lose him when they did, because, you know, obviously the fumble on the first drive was not great and you don't want to see that. But like on the pass attempts he got, he looked, you know, we talked last week. My number one thing going into this game is, can Rice have some playmakers step up in the passing game on offense? And that happened all around. He looked great in the, you know, just a couple of throws that he got. Had a couple nice ones to Austin Trammell, a good one to August Pete, I think, and then the long gain to Brad Rosner to get them inside. Looked really, really solid on all those throws. And then, you know, I just named all three of the starting wide receivers. I mean, throughout the game, I thought those guys were consistently making plays, including Brad Rosner, who had, you know, a 100-yard game. So, we'll obviously talk about Tom Stewart a little bit more, but you know, he got more comfortable as the game went on and made some nice throws. So, you know, as far as one thing, I wanted to see who's going to step up for Rice in the passing game. Well, you know, I think you can check that box off, at least for right now, or at least give yourself kind of a permission to feel optimistic about that going forward, because I really thought they had some nice moments on offense when they were throwing the ball.
Yeah, and you mentioned Wiley's start. So he was 7-14 for, I believe, 62 yards against Army, and he started 3-5 for 69 yards against Wake Forest. And, you know, for the most part, I think the longest throw down the field that he completed against Army might have been, I think, the 15-yarder to Nashawn Ellerby. I know Trammell had a big slant, but he caught that like 10 yards out and took that another 30. So, but we actually got to see that throw to Rosner up the middle. I mean, it was gorgeous. I mean, put it right where I wanted to and had guys moving in space downfield, you know, and then we had the unfortunate injury. So I wanted to see can Wiley and I guess now the quarterback position as a whole attack downfield. And it wasn't perfect, but from what we saw from Wiley and later Tom, like Rice has a passing game, which, you know, people were sounding three alarm fires after Army, you know, despite Blomgren saying that as much as he had, that he'd grounded the ball and done as much as he could to make sure that Rice was in the game in the fourth quarter, you know, chewing up clock. So that was a win. But so the passing game, I wanted to see signs of life and I wanted to see that it could be effective. I saw that even with, you know, going to Tom Stewart and putting in the backup, then he actually got, so he had the only passing touchdown that Rice threw on Friday. And that credit itself, you know, Tom was pretty good. The credit on the passing touchdown is all to Austin Trammell. I think he caught it at the 15 and had three or four guys on him. And that was the definition of, if you want to see a culture play of want to, Trammell just taking on the entire Wake Forest secondary and willing his way into the end zone. Like that in itself is a point that, you know, coaches and this team is going to look in on film and see guys playing it the right way. I mean, we knew Austin Trammell was going to be a dude and someone that this offense could trust and rely on. That was just one more moment. Was just like, get this guy the football. He's going to make things happen.
Trammell had a great game on the whole. Like, he looked great on a couple punt returns. He had a couple of, you know, short passes, screen passes that he turned into first downs. Obviously, the touchdown. You know, we knew going in that he was a captain, that he was a playmaker, that he was the wide receiver they trusted the most. And I think Friday was a complete game in terms of that. You just saw everything in terms of why they trust him so much, why he's one of the captains, why he's, you know, going to be counted on as one of the major playmakers. I thought August Pete showed a couple of nice, had a couple, you know, we talked about that he was a guy that they trust to be a really acrobatic, athletic guy and kind of go up and make catches. And, you know, he didn't have any of those like fade routes in the end zone type things, but he had a couple, you know, there was definitely one, I think, on the second touchdown drive, right before Tom Stewart's touchdown run, where he ran like a little out route and was double covered, and Stewart kind of dropped the ball into a bucket and he went up and made a really acrobatic catch on that one. So really good effort all around from Rice's starting wide receiver group. I was really impressed with that.
Yeah, August Pete was, so he was one of those guys last year that just had kind of some nagging things and never quite got back to health. So they didn't force it and put him in because they didn't have to, just given, you know, the receiving core, what was going on with last year's team. So he was one of the guys that I was really excited to see coming in this fall and fall camp. And, you know, last week working through the first team offense, he was the guy that consistently every single day flashed and did something super athletic, did, you know, went up and mossed. I don't remember who was, I think it was Trayshon DeBones actually, on a play, just went over and snatched the ball right out of his hands. Crazy athleticism. I think I heard someone mention on the broadcast, they mentioned his vertical and what he can do in the air. You know, I was pretty confident we were going to see more of the wide receiving core than we did against Army. And I figured August Pete would be the biggest recipient of that bump. And he was, and it was really encouraging to see him go and make plays when his number was called. He's the guy that is going to be, and I think so, and we'll get into some of the younger guys that we didn't quite see. When I talked to Blomgren during practice this week, he made a pretty clear delineation between who he called the core three, between Trammell, Rosner, and August Pete. You know, he made mention that guys like Zane Knipe and Jake Bailey, Rhett Cardwell was out there on a couple plays, things like that. There's going to be some other guys that will get in the mix, but he so far at this point has said there is a three and then there is a step down.
Yeah, definitely. And that's, you know, that's pretty typical. There aren't a ton of teams out there that are going to go, you know, except for like air raid teams that are kind of base four wide. Like a lot of teams are going to have kind of a top three, maybe a top four. And then, you know, beyond that, you know, there's only so many touches you can give out, even if you throw the ball a ton, which Rice certainly doesn't.
And I will say I was paying attention. So Rice was playing keep up for a good chunk of this game. I did take note that I think there was at least one, maybe two, four wide sets, might have even gone five wide at that point. But even in that moment, there was two tight ends, or I think it was Cam Montgomery, maybe on the field with them. So even when they knew they had to throw the ball and we're going to spread it out, we didn't see the younger guys as involved as I thought they would be.
And then last note on the wide receivers, I do want to give credit to Brad Rosner. You know, we saw what he can bring. I think, you know, he's not like not a burner, which it can be hard to be when you're as big of a guy as he is, but really solid hands and did a great job of using his size on that long throw on the first touchdown drive that he got from Wiley. You know, that was just a skinny post, what they call a glance route. You know, he just had a one-on-one matchup on the outside and the corner was playing outside, or was playing inside leverage, actually, I think. But he used his size to just kind of get inside the guy and box him out and get it at the catch point. And, you know, from there he was off. Just a good effort from the guys in the passing game all around, I thought. In the running game, you know, you look at the numbers, and first of all, it's not like quite as quote unquote bad as it appears, because college football still, for some baffling reason, counts sacks as rushing yards. So if you subtract the sack yards and carries out, it ends up being like 33 carries for like 90-ish yards. which is still not great. And the thing I saw looking at it, I haven't had a chance to watch to rewatch the full game yet and really kind of look at it in detail. It didn't look like the offensive line was like a total disaster or anything like that, like you might expect when you see less than 3 yards a carry or something. There were a number of runs where they really did have it blocked up pretty well. Wake was honestly tackling great at the second level. Like there were a number of plays where there was a hole and the running back hit it and got those first 5 or 6 yards. And then, you know, they ran into a defensive back or a linebacker at 6, 7, 8 yards. And there was one guy who could have made the play and he did. I don't want to, you know, just be like, you know, there's nothing to improve on here. Tip your cap, move on. But I don't think the effort from the offensive line in particular, I think, was better than those rushing numbers might lead you to expect. And you could tell based on the way Wake was playing that, you know, they had a game plan coming in, that they had seen the way Rice played on offense and they weren't going to let themselves get run over. They were playing a lot of heavy boxes, especially when Rice was in their heavy sets where they, you know, are in 22 or 23 personnel and they have all those backs and tight ends in, that they were not going to get gashed. And so there were a number of plays where it was blocked pretty well up front and Wake just made the play they needed to play to turn it, to keep it, you know, a 6, 7, 8 yard gain from turning into a 15 to 20 yard gain.
Yeah. And I think that really the difference I saw was when Rice was running the ball against Army, the offensive line won most of the time, even to the point where they were 2 or 3 yards downfield and had made holes and the back didn't have to touch somebody until they were getting to the linebackers. The offensive line, when they were blocking the run against Wake Forest, I don't recall seeing as many of those instances where they won to the degree where there was enough space for the backs to get to that second level before contact. That there were a handful of times where Wake got interior pressure and, you know, through the middle and was able to get, you know, meet backs in the backfield. But a lot of the times it was, you know, that grind and that smash at the line of scrimmage to the point where it was a standstill and there were, you know, roadblocks when the backs were trying to make it through. And it wasn't, I have 5 yards to pick up momentum, get 2 yards down the field, and then I'm meeting somebody. It was, I have to hit somebody at the line of scrimmage and move them. So I don't think we saw as effective of a game from the offensive line here.
No.
And I think we also saw our running backs when they had to, I mean, and Wake Forest, I think Justin Strawn, he's an incredible upperclassman linebacker that's probably going to have near 150 some odd tackles this year. Like, he had an incredible game, but the running backs didn't win at the second level by and large. And so those two things combined, I went ahead and I did the numbers, pulled out. If you take out the negative yardage from the quarterbacks, you still get 29 carries for 82 yards. So you're looking at a 2.8 yards per clip, which is pretty stark considering this same team ran for 6 yards a carry against Army.
Definitely not the game they want to have up front. And, you know, part of that is just that, I mean, that is kind of the difference between being in, say, CUSA and being in the ACC, is that it's, you know, the style that Rice wants to play, there's a lot of value in that. And there's a lot of, you can do a lot of good things that way. And I think it will lead them to a lot of success in conference play. But sometimes it's just hard to line up and bowl over guys when the guys you're trying to line up and bowl over are bigger and faster than you.
Well, and Blomgren said as much when he made his post-game comments. He basically said that Wake Forest on defensive in the front seven didn't do anything fancy. He said they just lined up and played their gap and won, which, you know, like you said, difference between a, you know, a group of five team independent like Army and Wake Forest.
Yeah, and it's I think you can have some optimism going forward that Rice will be able to win battles like that, even against teams that, you know, on paper have superior talent. But that's going to take some more building. I think there's a reason the roster has turned over so much over the first, you know, season plus of the Blomgren era. It's to play the style that Rice wants to play and to do it really, really effectively to where they can impose their will even on teams from power conferences. It's going to take a while to get there. And so,
and here's one wrinkle that I think, because so when Wiley went down, Rice was trailing 14-0. And then Tom came in, had the touchdown run. Austin Trammell had that great punt return. And then Tom had a touchdown run of his own, tied up at 14. At that point, you know, the offense and the team was kind of riding off momentum. And I think Rice responded so well to that adversity that, you know, almost there were moments where we kind of let slip out of our minds, or my mind, that, you know, Rice was on their second string quarterback. And Tom is not talented. He's a very capable quarterback. And we saw some sideline to hash throws like that were rockets, and he showed a good arm. Mm-hmm. But I think that what the coaches felt comfortable doing with Tom in on the offense versus with Wiley was notable, because you prepare for that situation, but you know, there's a difference between who is in that huddle and who's running. So when at one point Rice was 4 of 6 on third down, and that was with Wiley going out and I think 2 conversions from Tom from that point. After that, so going to middle of second quarter on, Rice didn't convert another third down for the rest of the game. They were 0 for 10 on third down.
Wow.
After starting 4 for 6.
Yeah, and I mean, you could just tell there were times when they weren't, they were having some trouble getting the play in, and the communication wasn't what it could have been. And, you know, that's going to happen when you have to go to your backup in an emergency scenario. And that's something that I think you can, you know, no matter, I think it's fairly safe to say we expect that it'll be Tom Stewart this weekend against Texas, however long they have him in at quarterback. I think you can expect that to get better, because that's just the sort of thing that, you know, there's only so many reps you can give the backup. And there's, you know, even if you give him reps in practice, there's, you can't really simulate game experience. So that's just something that happens as a consequence of having to put your backup in as a result of an injury in the middle of the game.
Well, and we touched briefly on, you know, Zane Knipp, Jake Bailey. Those guys saw some work with the first team, but neither of them played on Friday against Wake Forest. And Tom was more or less exclusively working with the second team in practice this week. So he wasn't throwing and hasn't really been throwing to, you know, Rosner and Trammell and Pete for a while now. So getting on, trusting that connection is one thing. And I think that hurts. That doesn't maybe not directly hurt the running game, but I think not being able to have that, you know, second counterpunch like they would have wanted, you know, kind of hurt some of what they were able to do on the ground.
Yeah, then, on the whole, I guess a mixed bag on. Well, yeah, go ahead.
Well, I will say I know we have fullback fans. We've been told several times on Twitter, so I wanted to get a we might not get a fullback note in every podcast, but we will have one today. So Reagan Williams on Friday night was 4 for 16 carrying the ball. And I just wanted to note out, I saw him take a couple plunges. That dude is terrifying.
I'm pretty sure on all 4 of those carries, he got hit about a yard past the line of scrimmage and then carried about 4 guys to, you know, 5-6 yards downfield. So these were not, you know, change up runs that where they got the ball to him in space on a misdirection, but these were straight I formation, fullback dive handoffs, and he got hit and he just bowled some dudes over to gain. And a really impressive yardage on each of those runs.
Yeah, and so he had, and this wasn't like put him in on the 1 yard line and take a plunge. Like he had a run on, let's see, the 25 yard line, 48 yard line of Rice, and then the Wake Forest 7. Like they just handed him the ball and said, "Go run over people," which was great. And I just wanted to call that out because he at Stanford never had an official collegiate carry. So his first 4 carries of his college career came in this game, and he ran for 4 yards a clip, which made him the most effective rusher that Rice had on the ground. So shout out to the fullback leading the team in yards per carry.
So, you know, on the whole, a mixed bag on offense. They need to be better up front. I think the backs need to do a better job in space of making guys miss when they're, you know, when they've gotten to the second level. But I think that will be something that on both levels they'll be more capable of doing once we hit conference play. And, you know, as long as Tom Stewart can get comfortable in practice, you know, getting the reps that he'll get this week, then, you know, I think you like what you saw out of the passing game. So some optimism to take carrying forward, I think, for the offense. On defense, you know, we knew it wasn't going to be. So we said the big thing for this game was, you know, look at the corners. How are the corners going to play? Because they weren't really tested all against Army, and they were going to get tested against Wake Forest. And, you know, how that we set all offseason, how they play is really going to determine the ceiling for the Rice defense this year. I would say you're kind of in an incomplete if you were giving a grade on that, because they definitely gave up too many big plays. You know, it's not like they were locking guys down. But on the flip side, this wasn't like last year playing Wake, where they were just running free, like Greg Dortch was running free up and down the field the whole game. A lot of these plays, you know, I think Coach Blumgren said that the wide receivers were like forwards, which in basketball, which is like Scotty Washington is like 6'5", and Sage Surratt is 6'3". And there were a ton of plays where the Rice corners were in great position, where they had guys covered perfectly in phase, in man coverage. Jamie Newman just made great throws, and the corners went up and contested the ball, and the wide receiver just came down with it because the wide receivers were a lot bigger than Rice's corners. So,
yeah, there was a moment when, I mean, Scotty Washington, what did he finish with? Like, absolutely was unreal. 7 catches, 158 yards, 2 touchdowns, long of 59. There was a moment where Newman threw a bullet to the corner of the end zone, and Bird was standing there with good coverage, and Bird is 6'1", 171 pounds, and Washington is 6'5", 225 pounds. He has 50 pounds on him and 4 inches, and Washington just went up and took the ball. And what we talked about when we talked about Army and, you know, not being out-athleted against a team like Wake Forest, when a lot of the breakdowns, I'll say a good portion at least of the breakdowns in the secondary, Rice got out-athleted, where a 171-pound corner shouldn't win those matchups all the time. Maybe he gets one. And we saw Ellis with a nice pass breakup on one-on-one coverage, I think in the third quarter, maybe, down the sideline. So, like, it wasn't completely unsuccessful, but that was a moment where, well, yeah, the bigger, stronger, faster guy should win that battle. And I can live with that being out-athleted in that piece. The biggest question that I was looking for is, you know, the second game of the year, last year, Rice played Houston. And once the Cougars figured out, I can just chuck the ball in the air and let a faster receiver run 75 yards to the end zone, that's how they scored 3 touchdowns in the fourth quarter and came from behind and beat Rice. So what I wanted to see was, how many times did someone get behind the defense to the point where Rice was chasing? And I counted 3. So there was one play in the second quarter where Wake Forest got their tight end down the middle, 34-yard gain. It set him up in the red zone for, actually, that was the play. The second quarter, Rice, I believe, held them to a field goal on that drive, if I'm remembering correctly. Mm-hmm. So there was that piece, but no touchdown. There was, you know, a 39-yard shot, laser beat a guy to Washington in the third quarter, and then a 59-yard touchdown, that long bomb to Washington in the third. So there were 3 times that I thought the Rice secondary just got beat. There was a breakdown, something happened, didn't work out. But 3 times, 3 big plays, you know, I honestly think that might be improvement from how much of a sieve that this defense was through the air last year. Like, especially against, like, we're talking like Sage Surratt and Scotty Washington and Frudenthal and Kendall Hinton had 2 catches for 44 yards, and he terrorized. He had over 100 yards, I believe, against Utah State. you see the stat line and you see that Jamie Newman threw for 300 yards and three touchdowns, which, you know, is less yards than he threw for against Utah State. So there's that piece. But, you know, all in all, I think while I might not have got all of the answers of what I want to see from the secondary, I feel a lot better about how the secondary played in week two of 2019 than I did in week two of 2018, especially when your starting corner is ejected in the first quarter.
Yeah. So the results of this game in terms of what we got from the corners and from the secondary were not exciting, but I think when you look at it play by play over the course of the game, there was a lot to take from it where you could say, okay, well, when these guys have to play teams in CUSA, you know, how many teams have receivers that big and that fast in CUSA? How many teams have a quarterback that are going to make as great of throws as Jamie Newman did all of that game? I mean, Mason Fine, maybe. Who else?
Jamie Newman is really good. Like, he's actually a really good college quarterback. It wasn't just anybody throwing for 300 yards. It was, you know, a guy who beat out a good quarterback last year.
And lest you think we're just saying that, something like over his last six games, I saw a tweet where they were just listing out his stats in Wake's last several games, and they were fantastic. And Wake had been great in those games. So we're not just saying that to say it to make you feel better about the Rice secondary. This quarterback is really, really good.
Yeah, I pull a couple. So on the road, first start last year at North Carolina State, three touchdowns, 297 yards, no interception. On the road at Duke last year, only 177 yards, but was 18 of 23 with four touchdowns. The bowl game against Memphis, threw for 328 yards, a touchdown, and one pick. He had one bad game last year against Pitt and still threw 200 yards and a touchdown.
Yeah.
It's never okay to give up 300 yards passing, but if you're going to do it, like, this is one of, if not the best arm that Rice is going to face this year.
Yeah. So I found the tweet. It's from David Hale at ESPN. Jamie Newman's last six games for Wake all starts 66% completion percentage, 8.6 yards per attempt, 19 total touchdowns, three interceptions, just over 2,000 total yards, and a 5-1 record. That's pretty darn good. You know, as much as the way things turned out in the passing game for Rice weren't what we wanted on Friday, that was a level of competition and a level of talent that they're not going to see. They're going to see it this weekend, but once we hit conference play, once, you know, just my big message this week will be just hope Rice stays healthy over the next 2 weeks, because once they hit conference play, I think just based on what you've seen in these first two games, even though they've both been losses, what you've seen in these first two games is that this is a team that's really going to compete in CUSA.
And I think there was, so Blomgren's big thing this year was taking teams to deep water in the fourth quarter. And I'm sure you'll hear that repeated time and time again. So there was a sequence of plays in the third quarter. So in the third quarter, Rice went three and out three times, and that was all of their offensive possessions. So during that time, Rice held to a short 23-yard field goal in the red zone, you know, got off the field again, and then it was the sequence where Rice had the ball on the, I think, on the one, got it down to the one-yard line, and then Tom Stewart on fourth down got hit in the backfield on that bootleg, turned it over, and then Wake Forest next play, 96-yard touchdown run. So at that point, you know, when Rice was driving, it was 34-14 in favor of Wake Forest, and Rice was knocking on the door at the very, very, very beginning of the fourth quarter. If Rice scores a touchdown there, it's now 34-21, and you're talking at a point with you can score two touchdowns, maybe even two touchdowns, a field goal, three touchdowns. Like, that's at the point where it becomes a ball game and the game is still within reach and your opponent has to be a little bit nervous. So Rice got to that point and then couldn't convert. And then that touchdown run was kind of, you know, the final blow that kind of broke the Owls. But, you know, from a competitiveness standpoint, like, Rice got to the fourth quarter in a position to make this a game, which last year, the first half, it was 42-3, and the game was over in the first quarter. So yeah. I'm already tired of talking about moral victories. So we're not going to call this a moral victory. But if anything, you can say Rice lasted one quarter against this team. Well, maybe 2 minutes against this team last year, and they made it 45. That's significant improvement. And I think it, you know, has a lot of things for us to be optimistic for about on both sides of the ball going into the next week.
Definitely. And just to hit on the run defense real quick before we move on from Wake Forest, obviously the 96-yard touchdown run, that was a huge moment in the game that kind of broke the back. You can't give that up in that situation, but at the same time, that was one huge play. And, you know, when you get athletic guys like Wake has, you know, all it takes is one play where guys are out of position to lead to something like that. Other than that, Wake had, you take out on kneel down, they had 33 carries for 106 yards. So just over 3 yards a carry. That'll get it done. That's pretty solid run. And, you know, I think we saw a lot of the same we did last week against Army in the run defense. There was just a lot of really solid assignment sign football against the run. You know, a guy would be there in position and make the initial hit, and then everybody else would swarm to the ball. So I thought the run defense outside of that one play was really pretty solid. Miles Adams, again, looked...
He was so disruptive.
Yeah, yeah. He's easily the best player they have on the front, and that's no disrespect to the other guys. You know, there were some plays where they definitely didn't get the pressure up front that they wanted, but...
I think the RPO is one of like the most quasi nebulous terms that gets thrown out when people talk about college football as far as what that really is. But I was watching Jamie Newman and folks up in the press box were sitting there when he was running these plays, and it wasn't just here's the ball, put it in the running back's belly, make a decision, and that, you know, that takes what, half a second to boom, boom, move it. He was holding onto the ball, and I swear there were times when I was like counting, okay, one Mississippi, two, and getting to two, and he was still with the running back in the backfield, and both offensive and defensive lines had already come together, and the discipline and how Wake Forest, how much aggression they had in sticking to and holding to that ball in the backfield for as long as they did, like that was the part of defending this that made it so much more different than Army's option, because Army made a decision, boom, 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 and went. And they held onto it for so long that if you are, you know, one of the linebackers or you're, you know, Trayshawn Chamberlain on the outside at Viper, the amount of discipline that you have to be able to stay home and guard that handoff, and Newman, who did take off a couple times and run it himself. And then obviously we saw what he did through the air. Like, Rice did a pretty good job. Like, Wake still had, I think, more chunk plays than Army did. Like, they had a couple, like a 12-yard run, 18-yard run, things like that. But for the different wrinkle that the Wake offense was throwing, I think Rice did a pretty good job with how difficult it was.
All right. I think that's everything I had on Wake Forest. Any last thoughts on them?
We'll see. I will note, so we saw 7 punts for, I guess, on the Rice side against Wake Forest. So Barnes hit a 50-yarder, which had some roll, but he was pretty solid, had three punts. Nunes had 4. So we saw both of those guys involved. And then Will Harrison didn't take any field goals. And I know that situation is still kind of up in the air. So Zach Hoban at this point looks like it might not be till conference play that we see him in any game action, you know, pending the status of his injury. But during pregame warmups, I put this on the game thread, you know, which we'll be doing those. You can follow those along at the forum. Just make sure you don't miss anything on our next couple games. So Harrison during pregame warmups hit from 50 yards. Twice. I was like, that's good. There's nobody on you. I'm grateful to see that. And then Chris Barnes was warming up, kicking field goals too. and Chris hit from 50, and then Chris backed it up and took a kick from 57 yards, and Chris nailed it from 57 yards. And that was the point where I was like, oh. And then Harrison, not to be outdone, I mean, probably nobody but me in the box is watching this. Harrison takes his tee, backs it up, puts it at 57 yards, and drills it straight down the pipes. So I saw the Rice kickers or punter slash kicker try 40 balls from 50 yards or longer and made all four. So I realize that's completely different from a live game situation, and there's nobody in your face and you can kick it as low and as long as you want. But I think that we might have a little bit more hope from the specialist than maybe we originally thought against Army. So that's through practice I've seen a little bit, and you know, being able to kick that kind of distance with accuracy during the pregames is a good sign. It's not the end all be all, but it's worth noting.
And I wouldn't really put, you know, I give credit to Coach Blumgren and the rest of the staff. I wouldn't really put the lack of attempts for the kickers in this game on how the coaches feel about them, because, you know, Rice went for it several times on fourth down. They went inside the goal line and did they get it once, and then they were stopped right before the long run. Anyway, my point is, this wasn't a game where you were going to be kicking field goals on fourth and goal and have a chance to win it. So I think that was good decision making just in general, even if you have absolute confidence in your kicker. I think this was a game where you needed to be as aggressive as possible on fourth down in goal line situations. So I don't take that decision making as any kind of comment on the kickers themselves.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, that does it for Wake. Before we move on to Texas, obviously, you know, for a team like Rice in the situation they're in and where they're at in this sort of this rebuild, taking on a team like Texas is a big task. And if you're going to have any thought of winning this game, there's a lot of things that have to go right for you. So to that end, we have a little treat for y'all right now, talking maybe to some people who have experience with what it's like to see a team be on the winning side of an upset like that.
Yeah. So I was thinking of this idea of, because obviously in Conference USA last year, Old Dominion beat Virginia Tech, and I mean, they were nominated for an ESPY, you know, for whether or not you care about watching the ESPYs or not, like for a big upset, it was a pretty big deal. And so you had, you know, Troy beat LSU 2 years ago. Obviously you had Georgia State knock off Tennessee, you know, Georgia Southern over Florida a couple years ago, UCF before Scott Frost beating Teddy Bridgewater and Louisville. So there's always maybe a game or two games a year where this kind of marquee upset happens, and no one ever sees it coming. And it's always to somebody who's, you know, a 20, 30 point underdog, and this is supposed to be a snoozer of a game, and then all of a sudden it happens. So I know a handful of guys that were at and covered these teams, and so I've been reaching out to them, and we'll have a feature, you know, either when this releases or shortly after, up on the site talking to some of these guys. And, you know, what's the formula? What happened? What was the situation in which a Rice could beat a Texas or things like that? So went ahead, and good friends over at the Scott and Holman podcast cover Houston across the seat, brought across the street, brought Sam on and just kind of talked him through and, you know, picked his brain, you know, when Houston beat Oklahoma in 2016, fittingly enough, when Tom Herman was the coach at Houston, you know, how'd that happen, and kind of talk through some stuff. So give a listen to, you know, his insight on what it looks like to slay the giant. And then we'll catch back up on the other side and kind of talk through Texas and, you know, how Rice can try and engineer that level of an upset. All right. Welcome back for another edition of the Roost podcast. We've been talking through, you know, kind of what happened with Rice and Wake Forest. We'll get into Texas as well. But before we did that, on the theme of what it takes to knock off a big Power Five opponent, or what a shocking upset, you know, kind of the nuts and bolts on how that happened, we decided to go kind of work through some of the folks that we knew in the Group of Five arena who have been there and covered that and have seen these kind of upsets. So the folks covering our dear and near crosstown rival Houston from the Scott Holman podcast do a fantastic job, and they got to sit down and watch their team upset a ranked Oklahoma squad led by Baker Mayfield a couple years ago, which was quite impressive. So we have Sam on, and we just want to, you know, kind of pick his brains. And if Rice is going to try and engineer something like that, kind of look back to that game and see how it happens. So, Sam, thanks for jumping on and joining us.
Thanks for having me. I can directly trace my liking of college football to the Ken Hatfield era Rice option team. So this is truly going full circle for me. And thanks for so much for having me on.
That is fantastic. And I think when the Roos launched a year ago, the first podcast that I jumped on was y'all's. So it's good to be coming full circle.
Yeah.
So we can go ahead and jump in, and I guess just kind of set the stage for us. Go back in your time machine a couple years. What's kind of the mindset leading up to this matchup between, you know, I think Oklahoma was ranked number 3 at the time, and y'all, and how that played out?
So I think the story starts with Oklahoma and Houston before the 2016 season, really indirectly 3 or 4 years prior with Tony Levine's 2012 and 2013 recruiting class. I think behind a lot of upsets out there is astute talent evaluation by a coaching staff at the G5 level. And Tony Levine, I think the most interesting man in college football that 95% of college football fans hadn't heard of, and his staff did an outstanding job evaluating their 2012 and 2013 classes. Just the number of guys who either were on an NFL roster or were playing today in week 1 on NFL teams just from those two recruiting classes is just astronomically higher than just about any G5 recruiting class and really just about any U of H recruiting class. He did an incredible job. Guys like Tyus Bowser, Stephen Taylor, Matthew Adams, Trayvon Stewart, he wasn't on that 2016 team, but was a mainstay for the 4 years prior to that. Just really did an incredible job evaluating guys. Really, I think the defensive side of the ball is where U of H beat Oklahoma ultimately, but was where Levine evaluated best. Just a lot of guys who were 2 and 3 stars out of high school, maybe got some power conference interest, but certainly not the blue blood names, turned out to be incredible college players and just perfect fits for what the U of H defense under Todd Orlando and his predecessor, but we're not talking about those teams, did. Obviously also evaluated well enough on the offensive side of the ball that U of H had Greg Ward, a guy who was a good college quarterback, a great leader, and an absolutely perfect fit for what U of H kind of wanted to do offensively in that power spread mold under our previous head coach, Tom Herman. So I think that's where it really starts, is just astute talent evaluation and getting hungry guys who were coachable and willing to be developed at the college level. I think that was that's where it started, yeah.
Well, I think that's interesting because just going through and naming off the list that you did, you named 5 or 6 guys before you got to Greg Ward, who I think most people from the outside looking in would have said it was unquestionably the best player on that team, at least at a college level.
For sure. And again, I'm also glad you mentioned that because I think in that game specifically, if you look at the game flow of it, really it started out with UH's offense not doing terribly well. There was one point on Oklahoma's second drive where they were up 7-0, and it took them one play to get into U of H's red zone. At that point, if you know you're a U of H fan like I was, you're looking at a 2-score deficit, and just the thought of, wow, is Oklahoma gonna run us out of the building on week 1 on national television with, at that time, basically the only game that anyone besides people with a vested interest in other 11 a.m. time slot games. Wanted to watch. That was what I was thinking at the time. Then U of H was able to hold him to a field goal. It was 10-0. And the defense really kept U of H in it while they kind of tested and figured out what they could do against an athletically superior Oklahoma defense. And obviously the star of that, you know, late first half and second half was Greg Ward, who had an outstanding game. Just took a lot of punishment in that game too. I think really showed his toughness more than any other game because he was obviously in a great deal of pain and did a lot of things that I think most of us couldn't do the level of pain he was in against Oklahoma. And just, but I think to my broader point there is really the defense that was evaluated very astutely, guys who maybe coming out of high school didn't look like sure things to be great college defensive players and future pros, did as well as they did and kept guys like Baker Mayfield, Joe Mixon, Samaje Perine, D.D. Westbrook in check long enough for UH's offense to kind of figure things out and get them back in the game, which they eventually did.
Yeah, which I think is interesting because, you know, obviously you think about that U of H team and there were some solid defensive performances, but, you know, as it's been over there for a while now, it's been about the offense and been about outscoring people to some degree. So there's an element there that, you know, I think if you're Tom Herman and you're scheming this up, that you want to be throwing punches and going blow to blow. And if someone's telling, you know, you got through, you know, the first half and you'd only scored, what was it, 10 points, 14 points?
I think it was 17, 16 and a half. It was somewhere around then. Either way, not a super low scoring game, but not exactly a shootout, as it were.
Yeah, but at the point where you have those unheralded guys, the other half of the team that might not be as, you know, publicized as being the ones to carry the team. And so it wasn't really necessarily Houston's core strength that put them in a position in the second half to compete, but really a collective team effort almost to get to the point where it was the fourth quarter, to the point where, you know, Houston could hang on.
Yeah. And the play of the game was, you know, interestingly enough, we've talked about the offense, we've talked about the defense. The play of the game was actually a special teams play when Oklahoma brought on their future NFL kicker, actually kicked for the Browns today, Austin Seibert, for a 50-something yard field goal. And just to be sure, U of H put their all-conference return guy, Brandon Wilson, another 2012-2013 recruit who wasn't super heralded, in the end zone in the event that Seibert was short. He was short by about 3 yards. Wilson catches it on the end of the end, the very tip of the end zone. He runs the full 110 yards of the field for a touchdown, and it goes from being a game where Oklahoma looked like they were about to take a one-point lead to U of H having a two-score lead. And a lot of times coaches like to talk about, the word I've heard for it is inflection points, but I've heard, you know, three or four different, you know, words to describe the exact same thing. The point where a game swings, and really, you can't watch that Oklahoma U of H game without seeing that Brandon Wilson return and realizing how much it swung the game, even more so than the offensive and defensive performances, which weren't nothing. But, you know, if Oklahoma nails the field goal there, it could be a totally different game where we're not talking about a Cougar upset. We're just talking about Oklahoma winning a close-ish week one game in 2016 and maybe Baker Mayfield going to the playoff back-to-back years after they had that surprise run and playoff berth in 2015.
Yeah, which is wild that you can really boil it down to, you know, we call football a game of inches, and you can boil that game down to that one play,
yeah,
where it goes from a 1-point game, I guess, to a 9-point game, and, yep, and it's a 2-score game in the middle of the third quarter, and I think that's the kind of thing that we've seen, you know, of course we're gonna talk about in this kind of series of pieces that we're doing on these upsets, Georgia State and Tennessee and what they were able to do and knock off the balls. You get to the point where you see that touchdown in the second half to make it a 2-score game, where all of a sudden, I think it's almost at that point when you're in the at the second half and you have a 2-score lead, Oklahoma or whoever that giant you're facing kind of has to do a gut check to the point of, oh, this is now a football game.
Yep. And there was another point even before that, you know, you talk about, you know, one play, maybe the time not seeming super significant, but defining the game. I want to say about a quarter before that, Matthew Adams, yet another one of the unheralded Levine recruits, meets Samaje Perine, Oklahoma's big burly running back, not head to head, but they hit and smash into each other. Samaje Perine doesn't gain another yard, has to be helped off the field, hurt shoulder, and that really changed the dimension of how Oklahoma plays the game. And it wasn't obviously Matthew Adams' intent to hurt him necessarily, but the whole way Oklahoma approached the game, despite being a super talented team with a lot of different ways to attack Houston, just not having Samaje Perine was enough that Lincoln Riley decided to go a little bit more pass happy, and that played a little bit more into U of H's strengths, more so than when they had Mixon and Perine mixing with a little bit of Baker Mayfield's running. So, you know, we're talking about Rice, Texas here, you know, one player goes down for Texas and you think, okay, well, they are pretty deep at every position, but that could drastically change how they approach playing Rice. And I think one other example is, like I told you off air, I'd try to work in the 2015 Peach Bowl. Another big U of H upset from roughly that era was that I think it was third down and seven. Greg Ward had just been knocked out of the game by a Florida State player. At that point, you're thinking, okay, well, U of H has their backup in. U of H is only up 7 points at this point. Florida State gets a stop here. They have all the momentum. They get the ball. They can tie it up. And at that point, U of H is really, I guess, you know, starting to look a little shaky to win this game. And Kyle Postma runs for 27 yards, and U of H scores the next play, is up 2 scores. The game at that point is essentially over. But, you know, Kyle Postma gets tripped up in the backfield. U of H might not have their biggest win of the 21st century. So that's two big wins right there where you can really boil it down to one or two plays in the game that could have drastically shifted the outcome. And that's, I think, one of the really fascinating things about the sport when you look at the game. It's not necessarily that one play, but you can't argue that the one play didn't have a huge impact on who won or lost that day.
Which is, you know, absolutely maddening sometimes as a fan of, you know, especially when you watch and everything goes right. But, you know, it's crazy how that happens. And I think another angle I wanted to ask you about. So obviously Tom Herman on the sidelines for U of H during that game, he's going to be opposite sidelines when Rice shows up to play Texas this weekend. You kind of walk me through, I know as a fan, it's kind of second guessing and you can't really, you know, boil down a coaching performance exactly, but what did you see from him and how he called that game and worked through? Was it really a situation where he did everything right and made the decisions to where the margin of error was so slim, or was there some wiggle room in there where, you know, it wasn't perfect, but somehow it worked?
I mean, I think he did the non-X's and O's stuff in terms of having guys mentally prepared for the game. You know, as much as I'm just loath to give Tom Herman credit for just anything now, you can't look at that Oklahoma UT game or Oklahoma U of H game, and say that U of H wasn't mentally prepared. And so him and his staff definitely did a good job at that. I think it took them a few drives against Oklahoma to kind of figure out, you know, what they could do, because quite frankly, U of H was at a big talent disadvantage, even though Oklahoma was, I think, to put it kindly, pretty defensively inconsistent under Bob Stoops' brother, Mike Stoops, who eventually finally lost his job last year and just never really covered himself in glory as that school's defensive coordinator. They were definitely a team with, you know, 4 and 5 star guys at just about every position. And, you know, U of H is lucky to get a 4 or 5 star guy, even through some secondary way, like a transfer. So just U of H was working at a talent disadvantage. I think they needed to realize, you know, what was Oklahoma doing that they could take advantage of. They did a really good job, I think, baiting Oklahoma, if that's the right way. A lot of deep balls, a lot of situations where the Sooners defensive backs, who really weren't that great in coverage that year, were baited into getting overly physical. It was a officiating crew that didn't really mind throwing a flag. A couple times it was just Oklahoma having a stupid personal foul, being careless with the ball. I think that helped U of H, and that's stuff outside of Herman or really any head coach's control to some degree. But I think just really defensively having them prepared for what Baker Mayfield did, and also just having the guys to work with. I think, with all respect to the players in this team currently, they all seem like good kids. If you gave Tom Herman the 2019 U of H defense, it would have gone precisely as well as the 2019 U of H defense did a week or so, actually exactly a week ago, up at Norman. You know, you can only coach so much. Like, the Jimmies and Joes really are the most important thing when it all comes down to it. And that was some degree Herman, because, you know, he brought in a guy like Ed Oliver, and he certainly coached up the guys the previous staff recruited much better than the previous staff. But I think really when it all comes down to it, we go full circle on the U of H win over Oklahoma, it was, you know, astute talent evaluation and a coaching staff that figured out how to get more of them than the guys who actually recruited them, which is no small feat. You know, when you're not the group that brings in a bunch of guys, it's easy to just kind of write it off and say, well, we'll wait till we get our guys. And it pains me to say this, I'm getting some bile in the back of my throat. Tom Herman deserves a massive amount of credit for inheriting a team that, you know, guys in 2015 and 2016 that were still largely not recruited by him and winning a whole bunch of football games more than just about anyone has won at U of H in the last 30 years.
Which I think is interesting that you mentioned the him not recruiting piece and kind of working through the roster. So Rice has gotten to a point where most of the guys who are making plays on Saturdays now were recruited by the current coaching staff, but it's a really young team. And, you know, kind of, I think there's a fair amount of question on the talent piece there, but I thought it was interesting that you mentioned the threshold of almost like there's a quantity of talent that you need to buy in to get a seat at the table to have the chance.
Yeah, and it's one of those things you want to believe, certainly as someone who I would say is school in the big picture of college football is an underdog. You want to think just like, oh, great coaching and want to and all that can really just overcome anything. And that's the great thing about the sport is that sometimes it does, but really more often than not, it's, yeah, if you're facing a team that's way more talented than your team, it's probably not going to happen more often than not. But
I was working through pulling my list together of who can I talk to about a shocking, you know, group of five, power five upset, I was counting on my fingers.
Yeah, we like to tell our fans to, you know, I think said it a lot last week, you know, appreciate the fact that we did go toe to toe and beat Oklahoma a few years ago, because as we saw last Sunday, it's certainly not something guaranteed to happen when a G5 team goes up and plays, you know, any of the sports blue bloods, which I think, and again, bile in the back of my throat for admitting that the Orange School in Austin is one of these. I would say they're one, although, you know, having watched them and having watched Rice, I do think there are some matchups that favor Rice. I do think that Rice can do some stuff. And I just, where it is in the schedule, no amount of Tom Herman saying, well, we're focused on Rice, is going to make me entirely believe that there's not some hangover, some letdown after playing LSU, because that was the titanic matchup of the sport this weekend with respect to A&M's game at Clemson. I think that was the big show-stopping game from this weekend. In any game, you know, regardless whether it was, you know, the Longhorns playing another Big 12 school, or the Longhorns playing Rice, mm-hmm, or mm-hmm, whoever, it's gonna be a letdown from that.
Yeah. So I guess closing in on this thought, you know, you mentioned a couple times that Tom Herman might not be the most popular guy on that side of town. Do you have, you know, kind of some trade secrets or some things that you saw from Herman on the I guess neglective or opportunities, I guess, for Rice to get a leg up, and, you know, kind of saw kind of a blind spot or a weakness where Rice might be able to, you know, get in and have an added advantage against Herman and how he's going to coach Texas?
He'll have at least a couple of fourth and shorts where he wants to go for it, because he has this weird kind of psychotic relationship with special teams players. I don't know if he's doing this at the Burnt Orange School in Austin, because despite living like 30 minutes south of there, I just do everything I can to consume the absolute least amount of his team possible. But he wouldn't call our kicker. He wouldn't call our kickers by name. He would just call them the kicker or the punter, which at the time we thought, oh, that's kind of cute. At the time, like, that's psycho. Like, Logan Piper had a name. Dalton Witherspoon had a name. Why can't you call him Logan or Dalton or Dane Roy, like you call the receivers and quarterbacks? So he doesn't like that. So he will go for it. And from what I've seen of Rice's run defense, I think it's actually pretty decent. What I've seen of Texas's run offense, I don't think it's the best. I think they're not super deep at the position, although, geez, the guys they got could probably start for 95% of college football. And that's kind of what you know, see going up and down their position groups. So he'll go for enough fourth and two or fourth and three when he could have kicked a field goal. And if Rice's run defense is ate their Wheaties, they might be able to get some good field position, some empty possessions out of, I think, Tom Herman getting a little too ambitious. I didn't watch the game last night because I was busy watching U of H look underwhelming against Prairie View in person there in Houston. But I heard he did something in a situation where 3 points would have benefited his team. He elected to go for it, and it kind of bit them in the butt at the end. So I expect that.
Yeah, he did that twice.
Twice. Yeah, that trend will hold true against Rice. And if you can get that offense off the field, you know, without any points, that's going to be a big advantage. And it's going to be, I think, him kind of giving Rice a lifeline at certain points. I will say, and again, as someone who has despised the Orange School in Austin pretty much since I've been able to develop opinions on college football, I do like their quarterback a lot. I think he's a real tough kid, and I think he's going to be a matchup problem for anyone who goes against that team this year, Rice included. I do think it was advantageous that Rice has gone against a couple of very unique, you know, tough in their own way offenses. I'm not saying Army and Wake Forest are the same as those schools, but they presented really weird, unique matchups that maybe will, you know, lead that defense to not be as intimidated by the prospect of, you know, Longhorn offense that's super talented, but really doesn't do anything schematically complex. Like they're gonna run more than they pass. They're gonna use Sam Ellinger a fair amount in the running game, and will never really take too many risks passing wise. And he did that here, and it was to Greg Ward's advantage because Greg Ward was more of a runner than a thrower, and it fit what he was doing. But yeah, you know, I don't know. It's not gonna be exotic. It's just gonna be whether or not, you know, really Rice is gonna need to play a perfect game to beat Texas, because quite frankly, if my team was playing Texas, we'd have to play a perfect game. Other than 15 or 20 teams in the country, getting you to play a near perfect game to overcome that talented disadvantage and really, you know, do what I think has been kind of constant for any G5 school looking for a big upset against one of the sport's big brand names.
Yeah. Well, so there you have it. Play really good football, coach well, eat your Wheaties. And we'll see whether or not Rice has, you know, the opportunity late in the second half to kind of mimic what Houston was able to do a couple years ago and knock off Oklahoma. So,
yeah, I guess we'll find out. Games when his team was a big favorite, I think we lost. I think we were a 25-point favorite against SMU up at SMU his last year here and lost by 22. So it will not be the first big game Tom has blown as a big favorite. And I say this with all sincerity, I hope more than anything in week 3 that happens. I generally root for you guys, but I will be rooting for you guys even harder than usual this coming week.
We'll take everything we can get. Well, thank you, Sam, for jumping in. And where can we find you and follow along with the Cougars and everything going on across town?
Yeah, we're on Twitter at SH Podcast, PAWDcast, because we love delightful puns like that. And we now have our brand new website, shpodcast.com, shpawdcast.com, has all our episodes, current to, I think, our first ever, and a fair amount of written content. I'm not someone who publishes 10 articles a week, but you'll usually find a handful of articles about what Cougar football is up to. We try to also mix in some of the Olympic and non-revenue sports in there. So if you want to see and hear some folks talking about the Cougs, we're there.
All right. Well, no Bayou Bucket this year, but it was good to get you on, and I know we'll run into you, in the weeks and years to come. Thanks for coming on.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
All right. Thanks so much to Sam for dropping by to do that interview with us. Great to hear from him. So we'll move on and talk about now Rice's own chance to slay the giant here. Texas is coming off, you know, in a big time game in Austin against LSU. So, you know, the first thing is, you know, what's their emotional state going to be like after losing a game like that? Certainly to come in after a situation like that and have that big emotional letdown, you know, no matter who you're playing the next week, it can be hard to get back up and play again. So,
yeah, especially when you're talking about, like, you know, we talk about expectations, and I'll never forget this quote that Dana Dimel, head coach of UTEP, gave during Conference USA media days. He said, how do you measure a head coach's success? And he said, well, they win the games they're supposed to win. Whoever's setting that yardstick, you know, the folks up at the 40 Acres in Austin, they think Texas, for right or for wrong, is a team that belongs in the college football playoff conversation. So this game for them this weekend, or last weekend rather, against LSU was a measuring stick for them, and they were supposed to win. You know, they were a team that had that opportunity to get that resume win under their belt and come into the Oklahoma game for them later in the year and, you know, make a run at the Big 12 and get into the playoff. That was their threshold and you know, their you know, end zone of where they were trying to reach, and they fell hard. And it was, you know, it was a competitive game with LSU. We're not going to break down all the odds and ends there, but this is a team that, you know, for all intents and purposes was, you know, played their biggest game and it's done. And so there's going to be a bit of a physical, emotional, residual after effect where, you know, everyone in Austin and on that team got up to play LSU. It was a big deal. To them, playing Rice is not on the same level mentally as playing LSU, you know, coming from a ranked team at home to an unranked team on the road. So there's going to be a little bit of a psychological warfare of how mentally prepared are they for this game?
Right. And, you know, one of the big things you have to win a game like this is you've got to want it more than they do. And there's a legit question as to, you know, how bad is Texas going to want this one? And so I think for Rice, it's going to be really important to come out, you know, not too emotional. You know, I say fired up, I guess, but you don't want to be too emotional to where you're playing sloppily. But you've got to have you've got to want it pretty bad. And so that'll be a big thing to look at. The other thing to look at is, you know, I never like to look too much into trends like this because the sample sizes in college football are so noisy and they're so small. But a lot of the reason people were talking up Texas against LSU last week is that Tom Herman as a head coach has a great record as an underdog. He's something like 8-2 against the spread as an underdog as a head coach, and like a winning record straight up as an underdog, which is
crazy.
Yeah, which is very impressive. But the flip side of that, and part of the reason that Texas fans have had a lot to say over the last couple of years about some of the advanced rating systems like FPI and Bill Connolly's SP Plus not being as high on Texas, the flip side of that is that they don't tend to play very well as big favorites. Like, I don't have the numbers directly in front of me, but I know Bill has pointed out that their record as a multiple score favorite is actually worse than their record as a like one score favorite. So,
I mean, look at their season openers the last 2 years against Maryland.
Yeah. And then last year they were in tight games against they were a one score win against Tulsa, 15 points against not a great TCU team last year, 5-point win against a not very good Kansas State last year. I think it was fairly close against, yeah, they beat Kansas by a touchdown. Kansas, a team that Rice did beat within the last 10 years and that would probably be a favorite against right now. So, again, I never like to put too much stock into these trends like this because it's such a, you know, when you do that, you're taking something that's a very small sample size and talking about it as though it represents a statistically significant trend, which generally it doesn't. But
yeah,
teams very much have a history of not playing well at all in these games.
And I talked about Texas and, you know, their aspirations of making it to the college football playoff. When Herman was at Houston in 2016, and, you know, what Sam and I just talked about when they upset Oklahoma, like, they were a ranked team. I think they were 15th in the nation at that point and climbed right at to the top 10 and were 5-0. And this was a team that people were talking about. Could a group of five team make it into the playoff? Well, they have Oklahoma and they have Louisville and Lamar Jackson. Right, was that Lamar Jackson? Yeah, that was Lamar Jackson.
Yep.
At the helm of that. You know, they have both of those teams on the schedule. Those are two top five teams. If Houston beats two top five teams and they go undefeated in the American, like, people were talking about them as a playoff team, and they went and they blew a game to Navy that they should have won, and they got ran out of town by an SMU team that was not very good, and they lost later in the year to Memphis, and they beat Louisville 36-10 and beat Oklahoma and Baker Mayfield 33-23. Like, they went, yeah, and stood up to the Giants, but when it came to games that were not, you know, the marquee game on their schedule, you know, Tom Herman's teams, they've come up flat. And we've seen that at Houston. We've seen that at Texas. And there's not really any reason, you know, you talk about not enough data sample size. Why we haven't really seen occasions where any underdog should really feel all that afraid to play. Texas is certainly, you know, very, very talented. But
from a mental and coaching preparation standpoint, Herman's shown it to us enough times that there's something there.
To move on to the particulars of the matchup itself, you know, we just talked about, you know, well, there aren't going to be a lot of teams in Conference USA that have the big receivers and the quarterback that can get it to them. Well, this team does have those receivers. Devin DuVernay, who was the leading receiver against LSU, is a shorter guy, but I just looked, he's listed at 5'11", 210, which is much more running back like than wide receiver like. But he had a huge game against LSU with 12 catches for 154 yards and two touchdowns. But their other two leading receivers from that game, Brennan Eagles and Colin Johnson, are 6'4 and 6'6 and 225 and 220. So it's what Scotty Washington did for Wake Forest on Friday night. Double that. Make that. Imagine they had two of those guys. So this is going to be another really, really, really tough matchup for the Rice secondary. And
yeah, and Colin Johnson was a guy that people were talking about, you know, an NFL draft prospect last year. And Brennan Eagles was, I don't know if he was the number one receiver in Texas a couple years ago. He was definitely a five-star, freakishly talented, had, you know, the option to go play Texas, LSU, Texas A&M, Oklahoma, wherever. So, like, these are as cream of the crop as you can get as far as talented pass catcher.
The flip side is that a lot of Texas's running backs are hurt right now.
I think all of them are hurt. Minus so, counting Ingram.
And Herman already had a tendency to run his quarterbacks a lot. He does come from that Urban Meyer tree after all, and Urban Meyer never met a quarterback run he didn't like. So, you know, Ellinger had 19 carries out of 37 total against Texas for 60 yards. On the whole, 37 carries for 121 yards. Their running game is not as threatening as you might expect.
So they've actually, Roshan Johnson, you know, Texas recruited as a quarterback because of the injuries at the position. They've actually moved him, and he's their backup running back right now. So Keontae Ingram is their starter. Their backup running back is a converted quarterback, and those two together, 17 carries for 71 yards, somewhere around 3-ish yards a carry. Considering what Rice was able to do, sans that one play against Wake Forest and so far against Army, this isn't a matchup where outside of what Sam Ehlinger can bring with the quarterback runs, Rice hasn't really faced that as much. You know, Rice should have an advantage here, which if we say Rice can have an advantage against Texas somewhere, that's a good thing. And they should focus on that.
You know, part of that is that I think Texas replaced their entire offensive line from last year, including Rice grad transfer Calvin Anderson, who's now the practice squad to the Jets. It may be one of those situations where things are really taking time for them to gel on the offensive line. So I think that'll be an area where, you know, this is an area where Rice can kind of take advantage. And, you know, when they choose to run the ball on first down or second down, when they give you those opportunities in the run game, you've got to really stand up and make those plays and put them in third and long, because the Texas passing game with Ellinger and those huge receivers is going to be a huge challenge no matter what. It's always going to be a struggle. I mean, just Andrew Bird is Rice's biggest corner, and he's at what?
6'1".
Yeah, 6'1". And he's on the skinnier side at what, like 177? So these guys, even on Rice's biggest corner, are going to have 50 pounds and 4 to 5 inches. So I will not, you know, however this turns out, I don't think it's one where you're going to judge those guys too harshly, because this is such a difficult physical matchup for them. It's going to be one of those situations exactly like it was against Washington and Surratt last week, where you can be in perfect position. You can read the play. You can stay in phase. You can high point the ball. You can do everything right. And that 6'6 guy is just going to go up and take the ball away, and there's nothing you can do about it. So,
which is, I think, and we didn't really hit as much about this part when we were breaking through the Wake Forest game. We know that that's the case. And so what you can't do on defense is allow those plays down the field to develop unimpeded. And what we didn't see, Rice didn't register any sacks against Wake Forest. And they had some moments where I think they got into Jamie Newman's face or got around him, but I don't think registered an official hurry either. That's a place that Rice
needs to improve in from last week to this week, because mm-hmm. you're right. If it's a one-on-one throw with Colin Johnson in the end zone, like Rice could put their three best guys from the secondary there, and that dude's a freakish athlete. He's going to be playing in the NFL. What are you going to do? So you need to make Ellinger uncomfortable, whether that's, you know, doing some sort of stunt or getting additional pressure or getting a hand up in his face. You need to make sure that the possibilities for him to go deep and throw a ball 50 yards into the end zone over your head, you know, he doesn't get many of those. What you want to force him to do is you want to force him to throw short in front of you, if not in front of the sticks, make him throw 15, 20 yards down the field where you have a defender behind them, because you can give up a 20-yard play and make a tackle and it stings, but it doesn't kill you. You can't give up the 40-yard, you know, one-on-one ball. Like, is when you Rice finds themselves in that situation Friday, or we have a Saturday game finally.
Yeah,
a Saturday against
they
Texas.
Play college, like, football on Saturdays.
Apparently, it's been kind of weird. I know college football season has started, but the last two seasons I've woken up and I've gotten to sit on my couch and watch other teams play football. So I that'll be a new wrinkle. Hey, yeah. Has Texas played at a Friday night yet?
I don't believe so.
So we're seasoned. That's adversity, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Anything we can get.
Yeah. So I think that, you know, you hit the nail on the head. The number one thing here is going to be Texas has such an advantage when they're throwing the ball downfield to those huge receivers. And, you know, they put up big numbers on LSU, who has, you know, Christian Fulton's probably one of the top cornerbacks in the country. And Derek Stingley was one of the best recruits in this class. And it was an immediate starter and just looks fantastic already. So, yeah. You know, against a secondary like that, they put up those numbers. So
and I don't know if you had the chance to go through and watch this game, but by the time it got to really the second half or the fourth quarter, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 touchdowns in the fourth quarter, one field goal. This was a glorified track meet. Like, yeah. The Texas defense, like the LSU skill players and Joe Burrow had a good game. He threw for, I think, 400 yards, but like this was
almost 500
and run, like, and from both defenses the entire half. So we saw some encouraging things from the Rice defense, you know, against Wake Forest going downfield. Like, the LSU receivers were wide open for pretty much the entirety of the second half. So Rice is going to have their opportunities down the field against Texas. Like, Caden Stearns is, you know, incredible sophomore safety, like really good through the air and on the ground. But Rice is going to be able to, I believe, to move the ball through the air against Texas.
Yeah. And I think, you know, the other thing, Texas replaces a lot in the front on defense as well. And it was back before Bill Connelly left SB Nation. He did his returning production rankings for this year, back in like February for teams for this fall. And Texas was like last in the country. And that was his metric weights more heavily when you bring back your quarterback and your receivers and your defensive backs, because the data shows that kind of continuity in the passing game kind of matters more, like it correlates more to winning the next year than, surprisingly, like getting people back on the front, like in the trenches and stuff like that, which I've always thought was interesting. But Texas brings back their quarterback and several receivers and several defensive backs. And despite that, they still were almost dead last in the country in terms of returning production. So that is one area that I will be interested to take advantage of, especially when Rice has the ball. So this is going to be another game like Army, you know, for a somewhat different reason. I think Coach Bloomgren will be looking to shorten the game as much as possible to reduce variance here.
Absolutely.
So they're definitely going to be running the ball a lot. And again, surprise, Rice is going to run the ball a lot. But Texas is not experienced up front. They didn't bring back a lot of guys from the front of last year's team. So,
and you mentioned the running game. So, you know, we think when we think of LSU, we kind of typically default to they probably have a pretty good running back because, I mean, they've produced some incredible NFL talent over the last couple of years. But Clyde Edwards-Helaire led them against Texas, 15 carries, 91 yards, 5.8 a carry, had a touchdown. As far as, you know, the pantheon of LSU running backs goes, like, he's fine. Like,
yeah,
he's nothing special. Lenard
Fournette, Leonard Fournette's brother, like, he had the chance to take the starting job last year and didn't do it. So, like, the rushing attack for LSU is not as, you know, seasoned as it's been. Like, they have talented athletes, mm-hmm. but it doesn't wow me to where it used to be. And they managed, you know, their starter averaged 5.8 per carry on the ground against Texas. And Rice has an experienced offensive line that showed well against Army. And, you know, we broke down, you know, the Wake Forest pieces, but Rice is going to have an opportunity. They're going to have to go to the film room and figure out what didn't work against Wake so that they don't, you know, go one-on-one. Well, I mean, you know, Carter, you mentioned these are new guys, but these are new blue chips. Like, these were the best players in Texas and around the country that may have only played two games of college football, but they're really good two games of college football. So it's early enough in the season that's there's going to be some uncertainty, and LSU was able to run on Texas. They just didn't really try to because they could throw so effectively. Again, if we're talking another point where, you know, Rice might have a push or maybe an advantage, I think Rice running the football, you know, which you alluded to, they're going to try and do a lot. I think that's another spot where, you know, the Owls are going to have an opportunity.
And for me, the thing will be just try to test that inexperience up front by throwing them a lot of different looks. You know, one of the advantages that Rice has in terms of the kind of players they recruit, like, these are really smart kids, and they can give them a lot. Like, you know, a lot of offensive coordinators, the game for them is keeping things as simple as possible. And there's a lot of, that's a very smart thing in a lot of ways, because the fewer things you do, the more you can practice them and the better you can get at them, especially in the limited amount of practice time you get. But Rice does a lot of things in the running game. Rice does, most teams do not have anywhere near the kind of scheme diversity that Rice has in the running game. They run zone, they run power, they run RPOs, they run these spread option runs, they run sweeps, they run fullback. They do basically any kind of run scheme you can think of, short of like the actual triple option. Rice has put it on film probably already this year. So this is not going to be a situation for Texas where they're lining up against like a Chip Kelly team where he's going to run like inside zone, outside zone, and the alignment of the tight end gives away which one it is every time, and he just wants to blow by you by running a play after 4 seconds every time. Like,
yeah, by the way, UCLA 0-2 as well as Rice, and Rice has looked better than Chip Kelly has so far at UCLA.
Yeah.
Side note.
So test that in experience. Look at the film, and I haven't had time to look at it that closely to see what Texas hasn't defended well in the run game. But I know Rice's coaches will be going at that as hard as possible. So look at that film and figure out what kind of run schemes have they been defending poorly? What have they been undisciplined on? Where can you see, okay, this guy doesn't hold the edge well on this kind of play, or this guy, you know, tries to shoot the gap and will sometimes, you know, overrun a misdirection play. So they've got to find it's going to be such a test for the film study this week, because they've got to find those little things that Texas is not doing well up front and focus on those schemes that they can run, because they can run just about anything. Focus on those things where they can find just any advantage they can.
Yeah. And shorten the game. You got to be better on third down. You got to hold on to the football for longer than Rice did against Wake Forest. And if you can avoid those 96-yard touchdown runs, those big plays, you know, schematically, what Rice wants to do and how they want to defend, you could argue that Texas is a better scheme fit for Rice than Wake Forest was. Now, obviously, they're more a talented opponent than Wake Forest was, but you know, if Rice could hang around with Wake Forest, then there's reason for optimism that they're going to be able to put together something that's going to scare Texas. And, you know, like we talked to Sam and, you know, other folks, that you never say never in college football, because, you know, we talk about trying to figure out who teams were, Georgia State coming off a 2-10 season and upsetting Tennessee in their own stadium was impossible. and nobody saw it coming. So I'm not going to go here and make a bold declaration that, you know, Rice is going to go beat Texas and go play it all over the internet. But, you know, wait and see. Crazier things have happened this season in college football because Rice is better than Georgia State.
And remember, we do these things not because they are easy, but because they are hard.
There we go. got a Rice tie-in. That is, yep. That's good. Have we talked Texas to death yet?
I think we've just about done it.
I think that is all I got. Thank you guys for listening. Please go on if you like the show. Give us a review and then follow along. You can always reach both of us on Twitter or on the site. Go ahead, and the forum is yours. Go ahead and log in, comment, ask us questions, or, you know, participate during the game as things happen. You know, hopefully we have something interesting to talk about this weekend.
Yep. And thanks again to Sam for talking to us. We will see y'all next week, and Rice Fight.
This show was edited and produced by Carter Spires. It features music from Joseph McDade.